KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
So I am in the East Lake neighborhood of Oakland.
Glen Park.
Rockridge.
I live in West Alameda.
Montclair.
Bushrod.
Coming up, we're checking in with South Bay congressmen. Then...
we just really have missed the boat in terms of the sentiment that some of these people had.
And now...
no one can accuse me of not being oppositional, but there has to be a respect for the democratic process.
Thoughts on governing in the age of Trump from former Representative Mike Honda and current Representative Ro Khanna. Then we'll hear from a choreographer with a crazy idea for her next show.
It wasn't daunting. It was exciting. And it never occurred to me that it couldn't work, actually.
Making it work today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Today, we're going to hear about South Bay politics from two men who've collectively represented the region in Congress since 2001. We've got a conversation with 17th District Representative Ro Khanna coming up. But first, we'll hear a few thoughts from his predecessor, Mike Honda, a Democrat who repped the Bay for 8 election cycles. KLW's Ben Trefney sat down with the former congressman and asked about the positive response so many Americans gave to first candidate and now president Trump.
Well, I responded the opposite way. But he has put out some executive orders initiating some moves towards supposedly building a wall between Mexico and ourselves, indicating that he's going to get cooperation from Mexico. But, you know, the president has this ability to stretch the truth or put some information out there that may not be completely true. I think the other is he's not discouraging anybody from coming up with bills to limit the flow of immigrants and refugees into this country, both of which I think are contrary to our character and to the kinds of values that we stand for in this country historically.
So if you were in office right now, how would you deal with having a president who's radically different from any president we've had recently?
First, I would probably build a good, strong, dependable coalition among my own peers and make sure that we have ways of rapidly responding to what comes out of the White House, as we have done in the past when we had our own colleagues talking about the radicalization of Islam or, you know, promoting Islamophobia. You know, we have to be able to be aligned and ready to be able to respond to those kinds of things quickly and be able to broadly spread our responses.
Well, but then when Congress is one party, majority party, carrying the presidency also, and you're in the minority party, how much sway can you have, in, especially in very, very partisan times, which in your time in Congress,
sure,
it seemed to become more and more partisan. I mean, I don't know if you'd agree with that, but it seemed to be until we get to today, where it almost seems like Democrats and Republicans practically can't speak with each other looking from the outside.
Well, I think that's probably on the whole an accurate perception, in that Gingrich, when he was Speaker of the House, sent an edict out to his own members that thou shalt not interact with the other members of the other party. And if you do, you shall be punished. And over time, that became the practice. And I think that's unfortunate. But in spite of all that, I think that there are still folks out there that could be our soulmates. They're not all boogeymen. There are a lot of Republicans who are of good character, good faith. They're just caught in a party that's extremely controlling. And I think that working with them and not seeing them as one monolithic character, but a collection of folks who have different backgrounds and experiences like we do, they just haven't gotten in touch with them, that we work with them and build this coalition even among the members of the Republican Party.
That's former Congressman Mike Honda speaking with KALW's Ben Trefney. You can find an extended version of that conversation at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. Turn to current Congressman Ro Khanna. A former college educator from Fremont, he was appointed by former President Obama to work with the U.S. Department of Commerce. He ran for Congress and lost to Mike Honda in 2014, but then ran again and defeated the incumbent last November. Now the Silicon Valley Democrat is making a name for himself in some surprising ways. KALW's Ben Trefney spoke with Representative Khanna in a studio at the Capitol building and asked him about his strategy for working with a Republican-controlled government.
Well, unfortunately, a large part of it is opposition because the president hasn't done things to find common ground. If he were to propose a massive expansion of apprenticeships, if he were to propose a real infrastructural bill, if he were to propose allowing prescription drugs to be imported from Canada and getting rid of the ban, he would see Democrats willing to work with him. The problem has been he's chosen an agenda that is so polarizing that there is no way in good conscience one doesn't oppose it. So the strategy is to oppose his radical agenda and then to put forth an alternative vision of how to create jobs and better wages in a country that has seen so many people left out.
So as far as presenting alternative agendas, you're expected to introduce a bill expanding the earned income tax credit in a $1 trillion spending plan. What's that about?
So the bill would basically be a 20% wage increase for most working families, making up to $75,000. They would get about $5,000 to $8,000 more in their pockets. And it's a contrast to what Donald Trump is going to do, because Trump's going to give $3 trillion to the investor class. The folks are going to buy mutual funds and stocks. My view is give this money to hardworking Americans who aren't earning what they deserve.
So that's something that would largely benefit people living in states that voted for Donald Trump. And you've been to some of these places since you've been a representative of Silicon Valley. Tell me about your visit to coal country.
It was great. I was invited by Hal Rogers, really decent former chair of the Appropriations Committee. He's a Republican. Trump carried that district by 25 points. And I was welcomed with open arms and great enthusiasm. Folks there are proud of coal. They understand, though, the importance of diversification. They know that they need technology jobs, that they need new industry, and they're excited about the possibility of technology transforming their opportunities. Now they can blog sitting in Paintsville and work for a company located anywhere in the country. So my trip was about listening and understanding of what Paintsville wants. And I came away with a sense that here are hardworking, entrepreneurial individuals who really want to be part of the future, and they deserve our investment.
So as a representative of Silicon Valley, why was it important to you to go to that part of the country?
Well, one, they're using some of the products that companies in my district are producing. So the coal miners' kids were getting trained on iOS software of Apple. Android software for Google, and they were having jobs paying about $40,000, $50,000. So this is a great partnership between Silicon Valley and Silicon Holler. Silicon Holler. Huh. Holler is a Kentucky dialect for a valley between the hills.
All right.
And so I want to help facilitate this idea that technology can help provide opportunity, jobs, for the middle class, not just in my district, but around the country.
So that's a national initiative that you're looking at. What are you looking specifically to do for the South Bay constituents that you represent?
Well, it's my highest priority. It's what I'm paid to do. So I have a monthly town hall, and out of those town halls, two initiatives have emerged. One is airport noise. There is a lot of planes flying over Sunnyvale and Cupertino and parts of San Jose. So we had the FAA regional administrator come to Sunnyvale, have a roundtable with some of the elected officials, and we're now working to change some of the flight paths or see what's possible to lessen the noise for citizens. The second initiative is on cybersecurity jobs. I reached out to a program in Merritt College that's providing internships and trying to place folks with a two-year degree in cybersecurity with companies in tech. And I'm hoping that we can expand that program to Ohlone and De Anza and really help some of these graduates of diverse background get jobs in Silicon Valley.
That's Congressman Ro Khanna representing California's 17th District. Last week, President Trump signed an executive order to buy American and hire American, that's in quotes, which seems like it could have a strong impact on employment in Silicon Valley. What's your perspective on that particular executive order?
I think it's too much of a sledgehammer approach. To really help reform the H-1B visa program, which needs reform, we have to start out with a few principles. One, that immigrants, by and large, have helped create jobs in the United States. That's just a fact. That we benefit from having the best and brightest from around the world here. But that there has been abuse of the system, and we should prohibit any company for having more than 50% H-1B visa holders, or paying workers below the prevailing wage, or bringing H-1B visa workers here to do low-skill jobs, data entry that are replacing American workers.
And these are elements of that executive order.
But the executive order goes much further, and there is no recognition of the positive role that H-1B visa holders are playing. And there's no recognition that we also need to expedite green cards. The main problem is that H-1B visa holders are dependent on their employer. What we ought to do is get rid of the country quota on lottery system so that H-1B visa holders aren't in a perpetual state for 6-7 years being underpaid, and that they can get a green card, and then they won't have a depressive effect on American wages.
Once an executive order is signed like that, what can be done to change it? Do you think that this is something that would also go before the courts?
It could go before the courts, but I think ultimately it's Congress that acts on these issues. We have a bipartisan bill that Senator Durbin and I have introduced with Congressman Pascrell, Senator Grassley, Republican and Democrat, that reforms the H-1B visa. There is a bipartisan bill that also helps expedite green cards. And I'm hopeful that Congress will act on these bills to get some form of comprehensive solution, recognizing the absence of action is increasing the power of the executive branch.
And finally, you're no fan of the philosophies of new FCC chairman Ajit Pai. He's looking to roll back rules on net neutrality, which prohibits internet providers from providing paid fast lanes to certain sites. What are your concerns with his ideas about how net neutrality should or should not work?
Well, to describe his ideology as idea-driven is charitable. He's driven by the interests of telecommunication companies. He was a lawyer for telecommunications companies, and every decision he has made has been to privilege these companies and their economic interests as opposed to small companies, startups, innovation.
That's 17th District Representative Ro Khanna speaking with KALW's Ben Trefney. Find an extended version of that conversation at KALW.org and click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Live music and dance go together like peanut butter and jelly. But what happens if you actually dance with the instruments making the music, especially when that instrument is a double bass that's almost as big as the dancers themselves? Choreographer Risa Jarislow and composer and bassist Lisa Metzakapa started getting together to experiment with having dancers and musicians move together. That experimentation led to Touch Bass, a show featuring three dancers, three bassists, and a live original score. Here's Risa talking about why she was initially attracted to Lisa's work.
A female bass player interests me immediately because I grew up with a mother who was a bass player. So I'm always interested in women bass players. But in reading about her, that she was also a composer and a curator, and so I was extremely curious. And then, lo and behold, who is the bass player in the Paul Drescher Ensemble? Lisa Metzakapa. So I was thrilled. And she totally lived up to the reputation that she set in that article.
Lisa, do you have anything to add to this origin story?
I remember that meeting really clearly because the music was really challenging for that piece. And so the ensemble was just, we were just heads buried in our music stands, counting, trying to play everything together. And we had been rehearsing without the dancers. And then one day they appeared in the rehearsal space and we barely even acknowledged them because we're just like, we have to get this right. We have to get it faster. We have to get it better. And we were playing and playing and suddenly this woman is making a beeline for me and it's you. And I realized it must be the choreographer, but thinking she would probably not even acknowledge the band because she was running this whole show and had everything else to worry about. But she made a beeline for me and like introduced herself. And I was like, oh, this is the warmest woman. I can't believe she just came up and said hello to me. And then I didn't realize the whole story of her being so connected to the bass and her mother being a bassist. But then, of course, on little breaks during the production, we got to talking a little bit. And I was so moved by that work and loved her work. And what she was doing with the dancers in that piece, that in my mind immediately I was starting to think, wow, it'd be incredible to collaborate with someone who's doing work like this. And we didn't really speak formally about it, but then we just kind of stayed in touch after that and started to experiment a little bit in the studio with some dancers really shortly afterwards, like a few weeks, a month afterwards.
I have done a number of pieces in which I bring together trained dancers and non-trained dancers. And I had this thought, could we make something in which the musicians and the instruments are the, you know, non-dancers and non-trained dancers in this piece, but are completely integrated into the choreography. That's what I was curious about.
Lisa, had you ever danced with your bass before?
No, and luckily I'm still not really dancing, which is what I kind of love about how Risa has made this happen, because I'm not a dancer. And a little bit in the beginning I was scared that I would have to sort of behave like a dancer or be some kind of clumsy dancer.
But I would never do that.
But now I know that she would never do that. And instead, the way Risa works with people who aren't dancers in terms of movement is she's really curious about the movement that comes from us as bass players. So this piece has three bass players in it. And the three of us have a really different way of approaching our instruments physically, and it is such a big
between yourselves, amongst yourselves.
Yeah, between ourselves. And also we have different ways in the course of playing different kinds of music that we kind of hulk over the bass or have to stretch a certain way or we have to reach different ways or we do really different things with our shoulders or our backs when we're curving over the bass. And we don't really think about that because we're just trying to make a sound on the instrument. But then suddenly when you're in a room with dancers and Risa, they're seeing all this movement that's already part of what we do, and they're kind of magnifying that and amplifying that and then sometimes abstracting and developing that. So it's interesting to me that I feel suddenly like I can move by just playing and being aware of that and being part of the context of things without having to be pirouetting all over the place right. Like a clumsy bassist.
Thank you.
some of the techniques I've developed on the bass really exploit that it can make a lot of other sounds besides a plucked sound like a jazz bass or a bowed sound like a classical bass. And so these are called preparations, just the way John Cage had musicians preparing pianos. You can also prepare a bass. And so there's a point in the piece where the dancers are kneeling beside the basses on the floor, and they're using some of these preparation techniques that I've worked on over the years to play the basses in this kind of disembodied sound world.
And what are you using to play with?
That's a great question. I have little rubber balls that you buy at a dollar store, and I've
the super high
those.
Bouncers.
The little rainbow ones that are sparkly or clear. And I have a whole bunch of those that I've made, and I make a mallet out of those. So I attach them to a stick, and we rub those along the belly of the bass, and it makes this kind of sad porpoise wailing sound. It's very beautiful.
I want to work with people who have that kind of curiosity and ability to make the work be the thing that we're there for. It's a combination of who I bring in and then how we work and what tone is set, what expectations are put out. So, that's the atmosphere I want to work in.
That was composer and bassist Lisa Metzakappa and choreographer Risa Jarislow speaking with KALW's Jen Chien. Together, Risa and Lisa created the show Touch Bass, which plays at the ODC Theater in San Francisco all weekend long. All that information is at kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. Today's team includes Lila Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Olivia Henry, Angela Johnston, Jeremy Jew, Lisa Morehouse, James Rowland, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, Carrie Spivak, and Andrew Stelzer. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley-Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien, and our news director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by Oakland musician Alex Jimenez, a veteran of the Bay Area open mic scene, and you can hear him Saturday when he plays the Bazaar Cafe in San Francisco. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
As I watch the clock ticking fast and slow, feeling alone, sit here staring.